Yeah, it's terrible radio weather, isn't it? That's what they say. As soon as the temperature goes up, sun comes out. Not having too hard of a time here during this first or this during this middle hour of Open Lines. The question I put on the table for you to answer after 3 years, and today is the third anniversary of the war in Iraq. After 3 years, do you believe that the war is just? If you started out believing it was or wasn't, has your mind changed after 3 years? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or email us at issuesetc@kfuo.org. We'll get that email right here in the studio and respond to your question or your comment as it comes in. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. In a half hour, Uwe Simonetto joins us. There are riots in France. You've probably seen it on the news. He's going to join us to explain why he thinks this is happening. And I wonder whether or not the Islamic component of these youth in France that seem so disaffected, they're called labor riots, but is Islam a factor? We'll find out coming up in about a half hour here on Issues Etc. Jennifer Roback Morse joins us just a little bit later to talk about fatherless adoption. You know that Jessica Simpson, this blonde movie star, singer, she wants to adopt children before she has some natural children. And then Dr. Ben Witherington joins us to talk about Leonardo's famous painting, The Last Supper, and The Da Vinci Code in the last half hour of Issues Etc. It's Open Lines. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, asking and answering a question that we've asked many times here on the program, and now on the third anniversary of the war in Iraq, is this war just? Let's talk with Vivian, who calls from St. Charles. Hi, Vivian.
Yeah, hi, Todd. I love your show.
Thank you.
I didn't catch the beginning, so I'm not sure what your definition of just is. But I would say that, yes, I do feel that the war is just, if any war can be just, I would say that this one is, if a Christian can accept the fact that any kind of war is just.
Okay, now, I'll just since you raised it, the criteria that I'm using, not to go into too much detail, is
sure.
the basic, does it have just authority? That is it being carried out by someone who has authority to carry out a war? Does it have just cause? That's the tricky one. That's where the question really is. And then finally, the issue of discrimination, killing the right people in war. You're going to kill people in war, right? But you don't
right.
want to kill citizens. You want to discriminate against or between citizens and the military. Okay, those are the three criteria. Still with it on the just war?
Yes, yes. First of all, when you say citizen, you're making the assumption that these are pacifist citizens, that the so-called citizens aren't going to attack you. That's been a real problem over there in that area. It's not an organized war. It's just various either rebels or former Saddamists and stuff that are doing it. Your first question, do we have authority? We have authority through our membership in the U.N., and they weren't willing to act on it, and we did. Did we have a threat? Yes, I think we had a valid threat because they have had connections and have had visits from Al-Qaeda people, and there is an entire movement over there involving Syria, Iran, where they have intentions and have expressed so to destroy our way of life, and have done so in little, small increments in Lebanon by assassinating Marines there, so on and so forth. You can go through history and find it.
All right, Vivian, thank you very much. So Vivian, working with those criteria, says, yes, it's a just war. Let's see what Jane and Arnold has to say. Hi, Jane.
Hi. Yes, I agree with Vivian totally. I wish we didn't have to, but we do. And we have the authority. We have, and I like the preemptive thing, too. If, you know, if we know it's going to be a threat, don't let it happen. Do it first. So
okay.
100% yes for then, now, and whatever it takes.
All right, Jane, thank you very much. Let's see what Doug has to say, calling from his car. Hi, Doug.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay, I'm on. Good. Hey, I think it's a totally just war. As far as being Christians, I don't see how a Christian could be against it because Saddam Hussein was very evil. There was ties to 9/11. Saddam was harboring terrorists there, giving money to Al-Qaeda to come and attack us. And as far as the weapons of mass destruction go, we don't know if there was any or not. Obviously, there probably was. It got documented all through the 90s. And as far as them finding them, it'll probably be years before we find them because Iraq is that's a huge, huge body of land, and they're not just going to find them in a day or in 3 years because then it's all desert.
All right, Josh, thank you. We don't know any of the answers to those questions, but what I'm asking is, what I'm saying here is I don't want to get sidetracked into where will we find WMDs and or won't we? Did you believe the war was just 3 years ago? Do you still believe it is? Did you believe it was unjust? Do you still believe it is? Has 3 years made a difference on the war in Iraq? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. In University City, Josh, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, Todd.
Hi.
I never thought there was any question whether it was just. I thought it was, and I still think it is. I think there's a question of whether it's just and whether it's the wise thing to do, and I think there's an argument to be made. You know, we could have gone somewhere else, or maybe it wasn't the right time. But I can't see where the injustice lies in toppling a regime like that of Saddam Hussein.
Okay, so you were saying, look, it appears just to me. If you want to argue that we could have gone about it in a different way, then go ahead and make your argument. But as far as the justice, it's not an issue for you.
Right. And I have lost my train of thought, I'm afraid, but I hear people complain about what we're doing to the Iraqi people, and that just seems ludicrous to me. You know, 4 years ago there was no hope in Iraq, and now there's some hope that things might turn out well there. So I can't see how the Iraqi people have been hurt, really.
Okay, Josh, thank you very much. All right, so I'm just going to give the tally here real quick. After the tide kind of turned here after the break. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 yeses on to the question is, after 3 years, is the war in Iraq still just? And then there are 2 definite no's and 2, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Linda says she's not sure because she doesn't know what all alternative we had. And Jim, before the break, said he's not sure because you can't know the truth. What does Harry have to say? He's listening in Arlington Heights, Illinois. Hi, Harry.
Thank you, Todd. Having been through a very parallel situation personally, I was in the World War II occupation army in Korea and was there for a year, and we packed up and went home, and 3 years later I got a telegram from Harry Truman that I should come back because we had a little war going.
Oh, how kind of him to ask you.
Yes. and had we stayed, we would not have it. I believe not only was it a just war, but also, to use a word of the prior caller, it was a wise decision as well. I'm looking at a map, and we are, there's no question that, no one questions the propriety of going into Afghanistan that we took care of in 90 days and wiped out 20 to 30,000 Taliban and troops there. And on the map now, going into Iraq, we have Iran surrounded. We have them boxed in on the west with Afghanistan and then a loose cooperation of Pakistan and on the east by Iraq. And in Iraq, we are in the center with borders of Saudi Arabia, of Jordan, of Turkey, of Syria, and of Iran. We're right in the middle.
Hey, Harry, before I let you go here, I want to get your case here because it sounds familiar to me. Your case is like in the case with Korea. Had you stayed in Korea after WW2, you wouldn't have had to have gone back. That's your case
with
regard
correct.
To Korea. And you're making basically the same case about it.
You're right. And if we pull out, as some people are advocating, we'll have a bigger problem on our hands later.
Harry, thank you for listening up there near Chicago. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It reminds me of the argument that was made by Michael Novak, I think it was probably about 3 years ago when we were talking about just war with him and asking the question about the war in Iraq. And he said, look, and he made the argument to the Vatican. They didn't listen, but he went and made this argument to the Vatican. He said, this war is just. Why? Because this isn't a new war. This is a continuation of the war that the Vatican did approve of to drive Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait. It's a continuation of the first Gulf War. We're simply finishing what we should have finished then, very similar to Harry's argument. And thank you, Harry. Okay, here's an email. This one comes from Albert. Short and sweet. His vote goes into the no category. He says, I thought it was justifiable war at the time it started, but in retrospect, I think it was a substantial gaffe, to be kind, writes Albert. Thank you very much for the email, Albert. When you guys email us, put your city and state so we know where you're listening. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. If you'd like to email us like Albert did, issues@kfuo.org. Pat's calling from New Haven. Hi, Pat. Pat, welcome. All right, we'll get Pat back here in just a moment. Let's see what David has to say. He's calling from Plymouth, Pennsylvania, and he's listening on the Internet. Hi, David.
Thank you, Pastor.
Sure.
I think the answer is kind of twofold. I think originally, by what we supposedly know, you could probably call it a just war. But as it progresses, we're kind of caught in a quandary, because if we're there because we're trying to establish democracy, I don't think that is a just cause, if you look at it scripturally, in my opinion. I don't think that that is a just reason to declare war on a country or to continually declare war on a country in order to maintain democracy.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I don't know that we're there to establish democracy as much as we have to establish something to finish what we started.
Yeah, I know that, and that's where we're kind of stuck. We're stuck in a situation now where we have to stay there. But if we start getting in this ideal that we justify ourselves by saying we are establishing freedom, then I don't think that that is a just cause for invading any country by what we'd call the just intention,
mm-hmm.
where war, you know, war must be carried out to secure peace and not for territorial conquest, economic gain, or ideological supremacy.
So, David, would you say yes or no to the question?
Like I said, I'm caught double-edged here. I'd have to say, knowing what we knew or what we thought we knew going in, it would be a just war. If we knew what we know now, and we still would have entered the war, then it would have been unjust.
Oh, that's very interesting. Now, I had never... Thank you very much, David. I don't think I've ever heard anyone put it that way. I don't know if I agree or not, but I don't think I've heard anybody put it that clearly. Knowing what we knew then, just. If we knew what we knew now, it wouldn't be. Although, that's the perfect 2020 vision of hindsight, isn't it? It is. All right, so... What about the rest of you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Just about 10 minutes left in open lines today on Issues Etc. We're coming to you live this Wednesday, the 29th of March. The question I've laid on the table after 3 years, is the war in Iraq just? Has your mind changed on it? I think Christians can disagree about this. We've had a couple callers. One said he didn't think a Christian could possibly see this as just, and another saying he can't see how a Christian could possibly see it as unjust. I've gone back and forth, tell you the truth. I really have. I'm not much for looking back in hindsight and saying, if we would have known what we knew now, because you never know in advance everything. And as to the question of why are we still there, look, this is war. When you take ground, you got to keep ground. Taking ground's kind of the easy part. Keeping it's a little more difficult. So people will disagree on this subject. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's see what Jerry has to say, calling from South County. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Todd. I was for this war all along. I felt it was very just war, but I don't think it's winnable. And because of their ideology, these people are not only religiously fervent, but nationalistic. It's all wrapped into one. I don't see the reason for us to have any more maimed or soldiers, any more deaths of our people.
So are you a yes or no?
Just war, yes.
All right, but you don't want to be in it, essentially. All right, let's see. I was trying to count up here. We've got, I'm going to say yes on Jerry. Yes in theory, I think, on Jerry. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 say yes, it is a just war. Most of them say always thought it was, still think it is. 3 are not sure. And then 1, 2, very emphatic no's. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Oh, wait a minute. I forgot to count Albert. Three emphatic no's. Although he thought it was justifiable to begin with, so he is one of the few callers who, he was actually an emailer, who has changed his mind on the issue of whether or not the war in Iraq is just. issuesetc@kfuo.org, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we're going to be joined by Dr. Uwe Simonetto to talk about the riots in France. And then Jennifer Roback-Morris will be our guest. Fatherless adoption is all the rage with the celebrities. Jessica Simpson is the latest to express publicly that she'd like to adopt children. Now, she doesn't have a husband anymore, you know. She and Nick, did they split? I can never tell by reading the tabloids. They either split or they were abducted by aliens. I can't, like, one of those two. But she wants to adopt babies. So, we'll talk with Jennifer about that latest trend in adoption. Adoption is a good thing. Is this necessarily a good thing? Dr. Ben Witherington will be our guest in the last half hour. He has written a book called The Gospel Code, Novel Claims About Jesus, Mary Magdalene, and Da Vinci. And we'll talk with this professor of New Testament at Asbury Theological Seminary in Kentucky about Leonardo da Vinci's famous painting, The Last Supper, and how it figures into the Da Vinci Code. The movie's coming out in just about a month and a half. It's open lines, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, I mentioned that I had kind of gone back and forth on this whole issue. And, you know, I hate to be Gilligan on this one, where I hear someone make an argument. You know what I mean by Gilligan, don't you? This is Jeff's famous analogy that he uses to describe people who hear one person's argument and say, huh, good idea, sounds like a good idea, Skipper. And then they hear the professor's argument, who disagrees. And then they look at the professor and say, that sounds like a good idea, too. And they say yes to both. I don't want to be Gilligan on this. I have gone back and forth. Now, I do have some personal stake in this as well. I have a brother who spent a year, more than a year, in Iraq, in the Sunni Triangle. Made it safely home, safely out of the military. And although he never really expressed anything during his time there, if you ask him whether he thought that we should be going to war, he wouldn't have thought so. Now, he went and did his duty, very nicely, by the way, decorated, commended and promoted, like a good soldier should, but he was not so sure. Now, you ask him about the Iraqi people, he says they need our help. But the whole war enterprise? I don't know if he'd put it in the terms of just or unjust, but he wasn't real happy about it. Now, if I look at it just a purely theoretical thing, knowing what we knew then, I was in favor of it. I said, we have to go do something. We have to go take care of this. Now, my argument has always been, we made the mess in Iraq. And it was our responsibility to clean it up. That's always been my argument. Let's see what Dennis, calling from his car, has to say. Hi, Dennis.
Hello, Pastor Todd. Thank you today. I have to emphatically say that, no, I do not think that the war was just, nor was it justified. I think a lot of people seem to have some sort of historical amnesia and have forgotten the fact that Saddam Hussein was actually an ally of the United States in the 1980s against Iran when the Iran hostage crisis was occurring. I think we also have a cultural ignorance about Islam and their resolve in their country. It was just a gross mistake from the beginning, and it continues to be a gross mistake at this point.
How do you respond to the argument I mentioned just a few minutes ago of Michael Novak? He made it on this program and elsewhere that this foray into Iraq 3 years ago was merely a continuation of our original foray into Iraq and Kuwait to expel Saddam Hussein when he invaded that southern country.
Well, again, I have to plead maybe there's some sort of historical amnesia there. The United Nations resolution at the time was that Saddam Hussein would be driven out of Kuwait back to his borders, and the resolution was that he would not be attacked. The elder Bush, who was the president at that time, said it was going to be a policy of containment and not to get into Iraq because it was going to be something that the United States would not be able to handle, and the coalition at that time was firmly against it, and those included many Muslim states who fought alongside the Americans.
But, you know, Novak's argument is that along with driving him out, he was forced against his will to agree to certain tests and other conditions, and he just signally failed to comply with any of them for the better part of a decade. That's the essence of Novak's argument. He says, so we got to go in and clean up this mess.
Well, personally, I think that's a fallacious argument, you know, because he had been contained, you know, since 1992. He was no longer a threat. They had documentation from the, I guess, the nuclear, I'm sorry, who the inspectors were, who had given reports saying that he did not have any nuclear capabilities. He did not have any of those weapons of mass destruction. This was all documented prior to the invasion, but it seemed to have fallen on deaf ears with the current administration.
All right. Dennis, thank you very much. I'm going to put Dennis down as a no right there. Let's see what Ann has to say. Ann, welcome.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hello.
I was in support of it most of the time, but like you, Todd, I think I wavered now and then. And the two gentlemen who helped bring me back to believe that it was a just war were Jim Avery, my state representative in Missouri, and John Shimkus. Whenever I've heard John Shimkus talk particularly, he makes things so clear and simplifies the whole subject for me. And it makes me realize in America, we want everything right now, immediately. It's the McDonald hamburger thing, you know, mm-hmm. We want it right now. And this is something that could take a generation as far as turning the minds over in that country and changing their system.
Ann, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for waiting on the line as well. All right, now I'm looking at this. The eyes definitely have it. And I think Christians can agree or disagree with the statement, Iraq is a just war. I think they can in good conscience, as long as they're thinking through it carefully enough. Now, you could disagree with how someone arrives at their conclusions, but there's no real thus saith the Lord on this one, as much as people on either side would like there to be. Now, there's definitely some thus saith the Lord as to what makes a just or an unjust war, but the application of those principles is a lot trickier than simply stating the principles. Now, no matter where you stand on this war, now 3 years out, people there, people everywhere else need our help. There is a war of sorts, small w in quotations, that will never stop, and it's always just. It's always a good thing to do. That is the war to find and help our neighbor, kind of that benevolent and merciful invasion. To help him and to bring him the message of Jesus Christ. That's what LCMS World Relief is all about. You can find them at our website, Caring for Both Body and Soul, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, or call them and donate toll-free, 1-888-930-4438, 1-888-930-4438, LCMS World Relief. Dr. Uwe C. Minetta will join us on the other side of this break. We're going to talk about those riots in France. What is going on beyond just a labor dispute, trying to get a 30-hour work week? Is Islam a factor? We'll find out next.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc. Larry Rast, Arthur Just, Carl Fakencher, Kurt Marquardt, Peter Scare, Cameron McKenzie.
You probably recognize these names as regular guests on Issues, Etc. But what else do they have in common? Well, they're all members of the Christ-centered, cross-focused faculty of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Dean Wenthe, Walter A. Meyer II, David Scare, Dan Gard, Charles Geeshan, Bill Weinrich.
Have you ever considered the pastoral ministry? Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. For more information, go to our website, issuesetc.org, or call them 1-800-481-2155. Preparing Christ-centered, cross-focused pastors for the 21st century. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
John Pless, Hal Senkbeil, Richard Muller, Roland Ziegler.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. It's not hard to find examples of attempts to limit the freedoms of Christians. That's why some are saying believers are in an all-out war for their faith. Attacks on the Ten Commandments, Christmas, and core Christian beliefs are making many of the faithful in America nervous about the future. Kim Troby reports from Washington.
Rick Scarborough with Vision America believes the war on Christianity is real. At a gathering in Washington this week, Scarborough made a prediction about the fight.
If America is not healed, it will not be because liberal ideas prevailed. It will be because the Church of America did not humble themselves and pray.
The War on Christians and the Values Voter Conference invited those who have experienced persecution to share their experiences.
Mr. Lloyd Marcus, why don't you come up and tell us your story?
Lloyd Marcus never expected to be a spokesperson for First Amendment rights, but after the Deltona, Florida courthouse refused to display his paintings during Black History Month because they contained Christian symbols, he knew he had to take a stand.
What they were doing were banning my Black history because it was centered around a church.
Marcus says he's enjoyed amazing support, even from those who aren't Christians.
I've gotten emails from all over the country because it's a perfect example of political correctness just going crazy.
Scarborough and Vision America are hoping to raise awareness and spur Christians to action.
Have you had enough? Then stand up, speak up, and join us as we seek to mobilize the church in America.
The conference included speakers like Senator Sam Brownback, Tom DeLay, and Phyllis Schlafly. For Family News in Focus, I'm Kim Troby.
Some cringe at the use of the word persecution. They point to North Korea and China and conclude that Americans have it pretty good. Scarborough says all the more reason to remain vigilant so America never ends up like that. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
Wake up with inspiration, information, and sing along in the morning with AM 850 KFUO. Hi, this is Paul Clayton with a Christian alternative to morning drive radio. Along with the music, we've got a number of great guests who help you start your day with an encouraging smile on AM 850 KFUO.
Issues Etc. is partially underwritten by Concordia Publishing House, publishers of our Book of the Month for March, He Is Risen Indeed. You can find a description of this picture book on our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, titled He Is Risen Indeed.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. A couple emails that we got during the break. Did we get these during the break or did we get them before the break, Craig? Was he checking the email as you were? I heard Jeff say, check the email, check the email. Well, we have a few that are left over here. What's that? He is cracking the whip. There's no doubt about that. Larry in Chicago writes this. The only reason this war can be viewed as just is because it fulfills Christ's command to love our neighbor as ourself. We have and continue to liberate a people who are abused in some unspeakable ways at the hands of Saddam's regime. I only wish we would do the same for those who are living in Haiti and Cuba. That's Larry. So he says it's just based upon this is loving our neighbor. That's a question we might want to pose to Uwe. Well, we'll see. I see him scribbling over there furiously. And then Barry from D.C. says, I hate to hog airtime, but count me in as a vote for immoral war. Count me as a vote for immoral war. So that's a no. You know, that brings the no's up to, I think it was five no's and then a bunch of yeses and then a few undecideds. We're going to turn our attention to the issue of these riots in France. And my goodness, it's like you're watching the United States in the 60s over there for the last few days. First, we're going to hear a news piece on these riots, and then Dr. Uwe Simonetto is going to join us to react to that and to give us his perspective on the riots in France. Here's NBC Nightly News, its treatment of the latest from Paris.
The cable news networks have been airing live pictures from Paris, France, all day today. The scene there at times looked to be out of control, all because of a massive show of force against proposed new labor laws. They were intended to encourage hiring by removing some of the restrictions on firing. In a country where a job is often won for life, many young people in France are angry at what they see as a bad deal. NBC's Keith Miller has our report tonight from Paris.
It appeared today as if France was under siege, as an estimated million people or more took to the streets across the country, demanding job security. In Paris, gangs attempted to hijack the demonstrations, but police battled them back with water cannons, tear gas, and baton charges. The issue is France's chronic youth unemployment and rigid labor laws. It is virtually impossible to fire workers here. A new government law would give companies more flexibility to hire and fire workers. But it also has a controversial proposal. Companies could fire employees under the age of 26 without cause. The idea has ignited widespread anger from the very people it was supposed to help, the young. Today, France's powerful labor unions joined the fight. Striking workers crippled the nation's transport system. 60% of trains stopped on the tracks. A third of all flights canceled. Even the Eiffel Tower was closed. After France's riots in immigrant neighborhoods over jobs last fall, Prime Minister Dominique de Villepin promised more jobs. Almost a quarter of the youth in France are unemployed.
I think that a government which sacrifices its youth, such as our government is doing, is the government of a lost country.
The government never expected such massive opposition to the way the French work.
The day ended in a standoff, the students threatening even more demonstrations, and the Prime Minister de Villepin vowing not to back down. Keith Miller, NBC News, Paris.
Uwe Simonetto joins us to react to this story and then to give us some deeper insights into what's going on over there in France. He's an international journalist, a regular guest here on the program, director of the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation and the Concordia Center on Faith and Journalism. Uwe, welcome back.
Nice to be back.
You make your home, I know, for at least part of the year in France.
Right.
What's your initial reaction to these riots?
Well, it's heartbreaking, but it is not unexpected. These riots are, in a sense, the outcome or the most absurd outcome of the French Revolution of 1789, of which Dietrich Bonhoeffer once said the French Revolution was the laying bare of the emancipated man in his tremendous power and most terrible perversity. And I would say it's not just most terrible perversity, but most terrible idiocy. If you asked me my initial reaction to this, they don't exist. By the lights of France's most famous philosopher, René Descartes, these people that you watch on television don't exist. Because Descartes said, cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am, since these guys aren't thinking, so they're not existing. I mean, it is really ludicrous what is going on here. Because if you know the situation, they are the most mollycoddled workers anywhere in the world. And all this government of Villepin tried to do is introduce a law that would allow employers to fire without explanation the youthful staff for the first 2 years, you know, until they reach 26 or whatever it is. In other words, challenge them. And now they don't want to be challenged anymore. Now, you have to understand that, of course, if you are a young man or woman in France, you have gone through a very challenging school period. I mean, it's no fun being in a French school. When German exchange students come to France, they're horrified. And, you see French school kids, and they're all gray in the face, and there's no humor there at all, no playfulness, because they really, it's exams, very helpful. But then, suddenly they have this sense of entitlement that that you have in part in this country as well, and they're not going to let go.
Okay, so this is a little difficult for many Americans to understand, but this law really only kind of modifies, it's not illegal, but almost impossible to fire someone apart from this law. once they get a job in France.
Why is impossible. Well, because of a very, very, of a 60, by now 60-year, excessive influence of Marxist-Leninist trade unions and social legislation that goes back to exactly 60 years, year 1946, Charles de Gaulle made enormous concessions to the communists in France and the socialists, but especially the communists, in order to keep France together. At the time, it was so. France was very close into breaking into two hostile camps. One would have been a liberal democracy like ours here. The other one would have been a communist system, popular democracy, as it's called. Large sections of the country, for example, Limoges, very close to where I am living, were solidly communist. So in order to prevent this breakup, de Gaulle said, okay, we'll take you in, and actually effectively handed key elements of the French industry, essential things like electricity board, the rails, the post office, etc., essentially to the communists at the time. They are run by them. And the communist trade union called the CGT, which is the largest union in the country, much out of proportion to the actual number of communist party members. And communist party members now, voters are maybe around 7%, and the union is huge. And that union has developed a quasi mafia-like mentality. I mean, they strike at any given moment for the most absurd reasons that you couldn't even fathom. And they jump on every horse. I mean, they are enormously powerful.
Now,
and selfish, of course.
We talk many times here in this studio with you, Uwe, about vocation, about Christian
right.
vocation, this living before God by faith and before the neighbor in love and serving the neighbor
right.
in love. It strikes me that the French, I don't know the religious landscape of the French people. You could enlighten
we'll
me on that.
That. Yes.
But it seems to me that the doctrine of vocation is fairly well dead in that country, if it exists.
Among those who are participating in the strike, and then one has to say among the about 62% of the French who are supporting them morally. Yes, the doctrine of vocation is dead, because what the state has, what the French Revolution has done in 1789 is to turn the state into an idol. The state has become a quasi-god. And the what Bonhoeffer pointed out, the laying bare of emancipated man by the French Revolution, is precisely what we're talking about here. The me has replaced the thou, the you. Now, the it is true that in France you have also parallel to all this, Christian renewal, both in the Catholic Church and the Protestant churches, but there are vast areas of France, first of all, that have never been truly Christian, even before the French Revolution, especially in the southwest and some parts of France, and where are villages where you don't have a single church, or where the churches, like once in the Soviet Union, had been turned into barns or pigsties. You have these vast areas that are not Christian, and where they are nominally Christian, where the kids are baptized, there is no catechism because there are no priests. Now lay people have taken over the catechism classes, but it is slow going, even though the demand is big. But you see, you know, you have to have somebody who drives the kids to catechism. You have to have parents who are prepared to raise their children as Christians. What these riots and the people who are supporting these riots tell me are a couple of things, which is, I think, very, very dangerous. If you live in France and speak the language, as I do, and listen very carefully to the voices around you and have close friends, as I do too. I mean, I would say a majority of my friends in the world are either French or American, simply because that's where I'm living in two countries that I love very much. You will find that the basic Christian emphasis on the other has left the general public, with the exception of a growing minority who held fast to traditional faith, and these are normally the nobility. Most of the Christians that I know, especially the Catholic Christians, that are really faithful Christians and pushing it, are noble. So they are still there. Certain regions that are, they're very strongly Catholic regions in France where there's nonsense going on. But the others, these people will tell you at one point, this whole thing is going to flip, because a nation of that importance cannot permit itself to continue like this. At some point, they are actually courting what I fear a very dire dictatorship, because it cannot continue. They're destroying their culture. They have destroyed much of their culture. They're destroying their economy. If you think in the last 10 years, the number of what we as as foreigners, non-French, find so charming about France, the little restaurants, the little cafes, the little bars, the little bistros, all that thing, have been reduced to a third, because people go out, these places go out of business, they can no longer afford staff. In my neighborhood in France, many restaurants have effectively closed down. So what the owners do is they say, now if you want to eat in this joint, you call ahead of time and I'll cook for you and I'll serve you, and that is it. But I cannot afford the staff. So where do these guys go? Where do these waiters go? Well, they either go to another country or they sit in, what most of these youngsters do, they don't even do anything. They don't even, for God's sake, they don't even flirt anymore. They sit stupidly, morosely in front of their television sets and that's it, and smoke. That's basically what they do. It is not edifying. If you would say, okay, well, they should have less work because they should see a nice Molière play in a local theater, which exists, or in our neighborhood, we have all through the summer masses of concerts. But how many young French people go to these concerts? These are tourists who go to concerts. These are the upper class people who go to the concerts, who are Christians. Concerts take place in churches, of course, that are especially open for these occasions, but you don't have the broad masses. It is a rapid decline of civilization, and that's the result of the French Revolution in the long run. I keep saying this, and what I can't understand, if I may finish this not simply, what I can't understand is that Americans say, well, one of the great events in world history is the French Revolution. No, the American Revolution was a great event. The French Revolution was a disaster for civilization.
We've talked about the Muslim factor in
right.
France, elsewhere in Europe as well. And you told me before the break that you find yourself in an odd position with regard to the French Muslims on this particular issue.
Well, I'm German, so I enjoy a little bit of Schadenfreude at the moment. because for once, I mean, obviously, I'm no great friend of these Muslim thugs that come in and break up the downtown areas. But for once, they do the job. They come in and they do the job that these demonstrating kids' parents should have done 10 years ago. That's giving them a good old lashing, you see, I mean, once in a while. They come in from the suburbs and beat the brown matter out of them, which, unfortunately, the parents should have done. But again, it's like in this country. If you spank your child, you're some kind of a fiend. And in France, it is very, very dire, because you really wind up in jail.
We're talking with Dr. Uwe Simonetto, an international journalist, a regular guest here on the program, about the riots in France. Our call-in number is 505-7850. or 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. In about 10 minutes, starting in the third hour of the program, Jennifer Roback Morse is going to be our guest from the Acton Institute. We're going to talk to her about fatherless adoption. It's the celebrity's way, and it's also becoming more popular among the rest of us. And that'll be our subject. We'll round off today's program talking about the Da Vinci Code with Dr. Ben Witherington. He's got a new book called The Gospel Code, Novel Claims About Jesus, Mary Magdalene, and Da Vinci. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, this is what I'm wondering about. We've talked about the Islamization of Europe. If you have a culture, economy, kind of a whole society in France that is showing the evidence of rapid decline, how much does it take for industrious, productive, not only productive in terms of their work, but also productive in terms of their reproduction, Muslims who are entering that country to say, look, if the French people aren't going to work, we will work. And if they won't have a culture, if they don't want their culture, we'll bring ours to watch this be another step in the Islamization of the French nation.
Well, they won't work. That's number one.
They won't?
No.
Okay.
No, they are not the majority. I mean, there are hardworking Muslims. Let's not generalize it here. But the people who come in from the suburbs to beat up people or smash up, these aren't working people. These are not even people who are capable of working because they don't even speak French well enough. They speak gibberish. Because their parents have prevented them from becoming acculturated. So, I mean, instead of doing something which makes a lot of sense, namely learning a lovely language, which French is, they do not. So that's one thing. The other thing that you have a point, of course, is the production of babies and, of course, the introduction of a Muslim culture. One has to be careful, though, as I said earlier on, if you talk about 62% support for this, this nonsense here, you also have a minority and a growing minority, and we're talking about 30% or more of people who have become very aware of what is at stake. And there is a growth in the growth in Christianity and in religious practice, and specifically in Catholic and Protestant, both Catholic and Protestant religious practice. And these are the most admirable people in France because they act against the zeitgeist. And they are very busy. And I noticed that in my neighborhood, for example, I think I've talked about the local Catholic congregation there before, which is very busy. Church is well attended, masses of baptisms. But who runs the joint? Who runs this congregation? Lay people. No priests left. You know, priests come on Sunday, consecrate the Eucharist, preach well. But that's it. You know.
Does the church as an institution speak with a discernible or any type of a powerful voice in French culture?
Yes, it does. The last pope has been very, very careful to choose first-rate people as bishops. And some of the bishops in key areas, like Paris, for example, Lyon, Bordeaux, which would be my area, Angoulême, the local bishop in my area. These are first-rate people, and they have something to say. The same, by the way, is true for a number of very fine Catholic Protestant theologians as well. And then there is a growth of the evangelical churches, who are very busy converting even Muslims. So yes, the church has something to say and is there, but again, it is not reaching the majority. But then one wonders if you go through church history, whether the church ever has reached the majority of the people in truth. You see.
Finally, Uwe, is this similar to what we have seen in the former Soviet Union? You mentioned the influence of communism
right
here, but maybe to a lesser degree. But in the former Soviet Union, the Balkans, and elsewhere,
yeah,
where communism just pretty much took one generation and frittered it away. Even that generation that survived communism after the 90s, the generation that lived under it the majority of their life, someone might say casually, they're just not a lot good for much.
Yeah.
Communism sapped their spirit entirely. Are we watching something similar to that at a lesser degree in France? A generation of young people whose spirit has pretty much been sapped out of them, except when someone says, oh, by the way, you're going to have to work to get paid.
Well, yeah, that's precisely it. I mean, it's not communism, obviously. That's not alone communism alone that sapped them, but it's the combination of the communism, of the media culture, of idiot bearded professors at public schools and universities, of the intellectuals in Paris who run around and crinkle their foreheads and look very important and talk garbage and some of the media, some of the newspapers, Le Monde, Libération, papers like that, are responsible, co-responsible for that, have sapped much out of that generation. And at one point, we can be sure that the entire nation is going to be challenged, and then we'll see whether they can live up to those challenges, as the Poles do in Eastern Europe.
Folks, you can check out the website for the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation. Just go first to our website, issuesetc.org. Click links, and there you will find a direct link to Uwe Simonetto and the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation. Uwe is an international journalist, and he joins us and has joined us to talk about the riots in France. Uwe, thanks for being our guest.
Thanks very much.
All right, when we come back from this break, we've got hour three straight ahead. What are we going to be doing during hour three? Two interesting topics. We're going to start out with Jennifer Roback Morse, a fellow at the Acton Institute. The story we're going to hear has to do with Jessica Simpson. Now, we wouldn't normally spend much time talking about Jessica Simpson here on Issues, Etc. This blonde, now movie star, pop singer. She was famous. What's that?
Craig wants to know why we don't talk about it. Craig, the single guy, wants to know why not talk about Jessica.
Well, Craig, I'm married. Jeff is married. Uwe's got a wife at home, too. So when you find yourself a wife, then you will understand why we don't spend much time talking about Jessica Simpson on Issues, Etc. Well, in any event, she made her fame. She made her fame. I've got a show to hear, do here. Thank you. Oh, thank you very much. She made her fame on the reality show. What was it called? Newlyweds with her one-time husband. Well, now that she's single, she wants to adopt babies. Jennifer Roback Morse is going to join us to talk about fatherless adoption on the other side of this break in the third hour of Issues, Etc. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues, Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM850 KFUO. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.